Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Greg McBride joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, Senior Vice President, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate. Hey, Greg, how are you?
Happy Friday, John. Thanks for having me.
Talk a little bit about the Fed. I'm just intrigued by what you have been saying. The further rate hikes seem very likely. Further rate hikes seem very likely, if not certainty. Talk about the participants from the FOMC and what they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, coming into this meeting, it was pretty widely expected that the Fed was going to hit the pause button. They weren't going to raise interest rates after 10 consecutive rate hikes, and sure enough, they followed through with that. So that wasn't a surprise. But they did release their quarterly economic projections. And so it's first time since March that they've projected things like where they think the economy's going in terms of GDP growth, inflation, unemployment, and their own projections of where they think the Fed funds rate is going. And that, I think that's where investors were caught off guard, in that the Fed was much more hawkish when you look at those expectations. 16 of the 18 Fed participants see rates rising further from here. Only two think the Fed is done. The other 16 see rates going up anywhere from once more to four more times by the end of this year. The consensus seems to be around two. And so that's why you hear the Fed's projecting two more rate hikes this year, because that's where there was the most consensus. But as you can see, there's a wide range of expectations, but they're, by and large, they're expecting that they're going to have to continue to raise rates further because inflation has been so stubborn.
Okay, so this is a pause, not a stop. And what do they think will happen if they raise rates two, three, or four more times?
Well, what they've gotten across here is inflation. And in particular, if we look at core inflation, the progress has really stalled out. We have just been kind of in a holding pattern year to date. I mean, really since December of last year, there's been very little improvement in core inflation. And that has to change. We have to see that come down consistently, substantively. You need to see improvement in a broader range of goods and services. We've seen some of the former trouble spots that we had seen, like food and electricity and even services costs. Those trends are improving in recent months, and that's a change. But shelter, motor vehicle insurance, personal care, apparel, all costs that households incur on a regular basis, and they're all still trouble spots. They're going up month in, month out, and at an outsized pace. Again, that's got to change before we can start to feel real good about where inflation's going. And, same thing, I think the Fed, they're going to want to see meaningful changes there before they can start to feel good.
Well, then why
are people having the effect and that they're done?
Why are people buying these things then?
Well, it's not always out of choice. Some of that's out of force, right? I mean, if your car insurance goes up, you got to have insurance. Got to have insurance in order to drive to work. It's not pure. These are not. I think that's what has made this inflation so troublesome, is that it's not just limited to discretionary. It's
right.
Been on everyday staples, and that's what's really stretched household budgets.
So what do they say about a recession next year then, or pardon me, this year?
Their odds of a recession seem to go down pretty drastically. They increased collectively their forecast of where they think GDP is going to go this year. Earlier in the year, they had forecast that the economy was barely going to grow this year, 0.4% in real GDP growth. Well, they upped that to 1%. Doesn't sound like a big increase, but it is when you consider 0.4% is about as close as you're going to get the Fed as you're going to get from the Fed saying a recession. They're not going to say those words. 1%, that's the different story. I mean, that's a little bit closer to trend rate of growth for the economy. So I think that's a pretty substantive shift. Now, does that just mean next year's when they think the recession will hit? We only saw a little bit of a slight downward revision to the GDP forecast for next year. So I think the notable thing was, in their mind, the odds of a recession this year do seem to have diminished pretty notably since March.
Talking to Greg McBride, and we're talking a little bit about what the Fed said and what it means. By the way, Greg, just a moment ago, you mentioned that the Fed's pretty solid about this actually meaning that we aren't going to have a recession this year. I wondered if that makes the Fed, of all people, an outlier here. Can you kind of handicap that for us?
A little bit of an outlier, though. That being said, the odds of a soft landing, that averting that recession, they have improved, although it's still probably not the most likely case, especially if the Fed does continue to raise interest rates. So we've seen, I think maybe a little bit more positive tone to economic data of late, but you still have really two-thirds of households that are really struggling, the paycheck-to-paycheck households. Are continuing to feel it. And even with inflation having come down, core inflation is still over 5%, and that's outpacing wage growth for most Americans.
What if we're still having a K-shaped recovery then? I mean,
very much so, yeah.
They say we're having faster GDP growth. Unemployment is low. Some people are seeing their accounts do well. And then some people are going to struggle, and as you said a moment ago, be hit by the essentials that are being hit with inflation that they can't avoid.
Yeah, I mean, K-shaped recovery that you mentioned. Yeah, absolutely. That's been in full force, and I think it will continue to be that you're basically going to have like an escalator going up and an escalator going down in terms of the different fortunes from a financial perspective of various households. Some things are getting better for all the reasons you noted, and for others, the situation is deteriorating because wages aren't keeping up with rising household expenses. Credit card debt is up. Yeah. The balances are higher. The interest rates are higher. The hits just keep on coming.
And here come your student loans. So the Fed's rate decisions have influenced the stock market or will how? What does this mean for my retirement accounts?
Well, markets have certainly responded very favorably in recent weeks. I think the avoiding any kind of debacle around the debt ceiling was, you've certainly seen a relief rally there. I mentioned the better tone of economic data and improved odds, even if they're not the most likely outcome, but just improved odds of avoiding a recession or a less severe economic downturn later in the year. All of that bodes well or bodes better for corporate earnings than what had been priced in. So, you're seeing stocks respond to that. I would just strongly encourage, and particularly when we're talking in the context of retirement accounts, to maintain that long-term perspective. If you are in retirement or approaching retirement and, needing to make withdrawals, make sure that the money you're going to need to make withdrawals with over the next several years, have that conservatively positioned. Cash, very safe bonds, you're getting paid for that. That's not dead money in your portfolio. We're in a 5% interest rate world now. You can earn a real return on that money. But with regard to the equity portion of your portfolio, you're going to need that growth over time to maintain your buying power. But we are going to have some choppy waters, both up and down. Yeah. You've got to be able to ride that out.
Hate to cash in those equities when the market is low, but will these interest rate hikes that they're talking about mean that CDs, that T-bills and I-bonds are going to continue to have attractive numbers?
Yes, the most definitely. I mean, the Fed is nowhere close to cutting interest rates. And it was, I think that's your real risk in terms of those yields is, at what point do they start coming down? Well, they start coming down when the Fed's done raising rates and their next move would be to cut. Well, we're not there yet. And so, yes, we're in a 5% interest rate world. The mantra for 2023 is higher for longer. Rates are going to be higher than were originally expected and longer than originally expected. So for savers, for retirees and near retirees, those that are looking to set up a fixed income or are already living on one, this is the best environment you've seen in 15, 16 years, and you get to enjoy it for a bit longer.
I bring this up every now and then when we talk about how attractive those conservative rates are, those conservative vehicles, and yet you get attractive numbers. But if you believe that the indexes are down and you think they're going to improve, depending on your time horizon, you might actually get more bang for your buck in the long run if you stay in the markets rather than do these more conservative products. Is there some wisdom to that, or what do you make of that?
Yeah, and you said two key phrases, in the long run and time horizon. So, yes, you know, if that lines up with your time horizon, if you're in it for the long run, yes, absolutely. Cash and safe haven investments, that's a way to protect your wealth, not grow it over long periods of time. You need risk assets like stocks to really grow your buying power over time, but it takes time, and you've got to be in it for the long haul. So, you know, if you're in your 20s, 30s, and 40s, and you're saving for retirement, you need to be heavily allocated toward equities. You're not going to be making withdrawals from that account for a long time. There's no need to be positioned in conservative cash investments other than to just reduce some volatility in the portfolio. But you get into your 50s and 60s and 70s, and now you're approaching retirement or you're in retirement and you're starting to make withdrawals, you know, that's where you need a more conservative position, and you need to be able to make withdrawals from the account for the next several years without being forced to sell your stocks at an unfavorable time. So that's what I was saying earlier about, you know, positioning those next several years worth of withdrawals in cash and very safe haven fixed income investments. You're getting paid for that. You're still going to be earning 5%. But you're also really kind of putting a big moat around yourself and the ability to continue to make those withdrawals even in a down market, because you can continue to ride out the volatility in the equities and not be forced to sell it at a down point.
Greg McBride is a senior vice president and the chief financial analyst at Bankrate, bankrate.com. Hey, nice to talk to you, Greg. Let's do it again soon. Thanks for your help.
Thanks a lot, John. Have a great weekend.
ChatGPT, at least in a pilot program, being inserted into Mercedes. Let's talk to Tom Appel about that. Publisher, Consumer Guide Automotive, the host of a Consumer Guide podcast called Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. Hey, Tom, how are you? Welcome back.
I'm well, thank you.
Catch me up on this. ChatGPT in a Mercedes, what's that mean?
What we're seeing is an awful lot of native infotainment systems moving away from traditional mediums. So we've got Google showing up in cars as well. Volvo, for example, is using Google. But increasingly what we're seeing is this connectivity where we are no longer just in our car, we're in our house, we can order things online. And Mercedes is moving with ChatGPT, which is interesting because I think they're the first to use that particular medium.
So what would it be like? I mean, you've already got voice commands in vehicles. What else will the car do for me that it doesn't do now?
That's a good question. I think mostly what we're going to be seeing is a smoother transition. This is the same thing with Amazon Alexa in the car, for example, where we're simply taking our life with us. So the car becomes an extension of our home office or our living room couch, something like that.
So give me an example of something I would do driving down the road that I don't do now.
The thing that you can do as it gets more and more advanced is better route planning, for example. Vehicles now will tell you about alternate routes if you're driving somewhere and using the navigation system. You can update your schedule. You can take phone calls. There's a lot of stuff you can do. I don't know what the new services might be, but I suspect that a lot of the services that we're not using now because they're not as user-friendly are going to become more user-friendly.
Well, I would imagine if you mentioned shopping, for instance. If I'm driving down the road, and I wanted, this sounds silly, right? But say I'm driving down the road and I go, I need new shoes. And I'd say, hey, Mercedes, order me some size 10 Nikes and have them delivered to my house. I mean, conceivably, that would be a, you know, more powerful computing process than I currently have in my car, right?
Yeah, and that would probably happen during a vendor that you already have an existing relationship with. So somewhere online, Amazon, something like that, you have placed an order for something like that, and you can place the order again now more simply. Other than that, I think you may have to pull over and browse shoes to determine leather color.
No, ChatGPT will know what kind of shoes I like. The AI will go, well, John, I know that you like blue shoes, you know. Da 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 da, and I'll get those for you. Got it, John. Okay, we'll catch up on that as it evolves. What else should we talk about in the car front?
There's a huge story that's bubbling, and I think it's not done bubbling, and that is the relationship now between Ford and Tesla, and just a little bit after that, we heard about General Motors and Tesla. But basically, Tesla is going to open its charging network, which is very large and very reliable, to the owner of Ford and General Motors electric vehicles. This is a very big deal because it seems to suggest that manufacturers have gotten tired of waiting for the providers of public charging stations to get their ducks in a row, right? There have been too many complaints about the charging stations not working, not delivering as much energy as they say they would, and the pricing's a little high, too.
So Tesla would share its network with the other automakers?
That's basically what's going to happen. If you have, say, a Chevrolet Bolt, you will be able to charge at a Tesla charging station. You will need an adapter, and of course you're going to have to join the network system, so you would be paying for that charging, but you'll have access to what is considered to be the largest and most reliable charging network basically on the planet.
How deep in the car market are electric cars now? Either by, do you have a percentage or number? Can you give me some context to that?
Yeah, they're way up in the first quarter of this year, and it's kind of exciting. But in the first quarter of this year, Automotive News is reporting that 7% of all new cars were EVs in the U.S.
What about hybrids or electric hybrids? I bet that's closer to 50% these days.
Yeah, and that's intentional hybrids. And by that, I mean there are vehicles that are called hybrids, and then there are vehicles that are now using hybrid systems or mild hybrid systems that are just sort of becoming part of the landscape. So there are a lot of luxury vehicles, Land Rover, Range Rover, Mercedes-Benz vehicles, for example, that have hybrid systems. They're called mild hybrid systems. They do most of the work of a hybrid, but they don't propel the vehicle just on electricity. And those are not being advertised or sold as hybrid. It's just part of the system there to improve fuel economy. So hybrids are creeping into everything, and I don't know if we can get a really good count anymore.
Was that what my first Prius was? We bought a Prius when they first came out. It had a gas engine, but there were times where it seemed like the battery got us rolling before the engine kicked in. Is that possible?
Yeah, the Prius was sort of the quintessential hybrid. It was the first real full-service hybrid. And that was a vehicle where the engine would shut off at a stop, and you would start rolling under electric power only, which was a huge energy saver. That is basically a pure hybrid.
Okay. And what about the range of these things these days?
EV range is improving slowly. What we're seeing is that the manufacturers seem reluctant to commit to range, building vehicles with range more than 400 or 500 miles, because there's a point of a sort of no return where the battery gets heavy enough to start to compromise your actual efficiency. So a sweet spot seems to be about 350-400 miles, and a lot of vehicles are getting there. We're seeing some more affordable hybrids still with range more around 220-240 miles, and public acceptance of those seems unclear at this point.
It almost doesn't matter, though, right, if there are enough charging stations and electricity isn't too expensive.
Yeah, and that's what's happening, too. We're seeing that people are slowly, people who own EVs are reporting that they don't charge publicly very often. The people who own EVs right now do have charging stations at home for the most part, and they do 90% of their charging at their home, so it's not a problem. They can just plug in every night. It's when you hit the road or need to go someplace some great distance, that's where the public charging network kicks in, and its reliability has been questionable.
You never have to change the oil on an electric car, do you?
No, you don't. You don't have to change the oil. There's no air filter. There's a lot of cost savings.
So these ain't going away. This is the future, right?
Yeah, and if you look at the commitment by the manufacturers, and this is all the manufacturers, there's so much dollar commitment there that there is absolutely no turning back. We're talking about huge, very expensive plants being built to build batteries all over the U.S. General Motors just committed several billion dollars to building a new battery plant in Indiana, for example. So, yeah, no, there is no turning back.
Whose EVs do you like?
I'm very excited about what Hyundai and Kia is building right now, the Kia EV6 and the Hyundai Ioniq 5. They're both compact crossovers, or something that you might call a compact crossover. Little expensive at the low end. I think you need at least $45,000-$50,000 to get in, but they are really fun to drive. The design is interesting. The range is good. The power is fantastic. They're just really likable cars, and they don't ask a lot of the consumer that is different than your commitment might be to a gasoline-powered vehicle.
Do electric vehicles have catalytic converters?
No, they don't. And there's nothing really easy for someone to steal. The battery would be hyper-valuable, but it would be quite a project to get that out of the car.
You laugh. That's a big issue in the Midwest. Milwaukee, oh, yeah. Chicago, it's crazy. And you mentioned Hyundai, for instance. Those things are not all fixed. It's a very slow ramp-up to change the technology in those cars. I can't imagine how frustrating that is for people.
No, if you have one of the Hyundais that had the turnkey system that was easy to steal, yeah, you probably feel pretty slighted right now. And the solutions have not, I think, been fully equitable.
I wanted to ask you, I heard about services in your car that are currently part of your car's hardware, but for which you might be charged a monthly fee, like electric seats, my steering column is heated, I love that. Let's pick it up here in a minute. 312-981-7200 if you want to be part of the conversation, too. You can call or text WGN. Right now, though, let's go back into the WGN radio newsroom, get you more business news. Here is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago hotels like what they see so far from bookings for the NASCAR event over the 4th of July weekend. Cranes reports bookings have gone up in recent days, and hotels appear to be doing solid business. Some high-end hotels appear to be lagging behind, though. The Illinois Hotel and Lodging Association says occupancy surrounding the NASCAR event will be roughly 80%. One hotel exec says her facility's occupancy will be stronger than last year. There's also a major volleyball tournament at McCormick Place during the same time frame. Rivian Automotive, with a plant in downstate Normal, says production of its electric SUV is ramping up and could overtake output of its electric pickup truck this quarter. The company has faced supply chain bottlenecks and a semiconductor shortage. It expects to build 50,000 vehicles this year, which would be double its 2022 production. Rivian says pre-orders for the R1S SUV account for 70% of its total orders so far this year. The R1S is one of a handful of battery-powered SUVs currently on the market in the U.S., including Tesla Model X and Model Y. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, and it's a Mr. Fizz Friday.
Hello, Steve.
Hey there, Jim Fizzell. Did you get some rain this week?
We got 8,200s in our rain gauges. Well, that's good.
Yay, the drought's over.
No. Yeah, I wish it was, because this was spotty and hit very few places really heavily. But our farmers out there, a lot of them, they sat there and looked across their farmstead at the one next door, and they were getting rain over there, and they're sitting there with none. So who knows?
Yeah, more from Mr. Fizz after I tell you we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, Jim, it's beginning to get a little buggy around here again. Those pesky cicadas are back?
Well, yeah, people think they're pesky. The 17-year locusts, people call them, or cicadas, we're seeing a few of those come out this year, and we're hearing some reports of them. Now, these are early. There are just a few of them coming out now, and you're not going to hear them very much, but you're going to see them as they start to die off and they fall down on the sidewalk. The main emergence is going to be next year, next May and June. We're going to have hordes of these things. They'll be noisy and practically all day, but mostly in the evening. You're going to see along your trees, especially big trees that have been there a while, you're going to have these white larvae that they almost look like a crab without a tail climbing up the tree. That's the larva. They're going to split open, and the adult is going to come out of that. It'll be pure white when it comes out. And a lot of people think those are great to eat at that stage, which the Native Americans did when they were living around here. They waited for that 17-year emergence, and they were out there to collect these things because it's a really good protein source.
Have you had one, Jim?
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact. Our entomologist at the University of Illinois that said, here, we got a bunch of these things. Let's see what they taste like. They taste like fat little things. I can't even describe it, but it's not untasty, and they're a good source of protein if you have nothing else. If you're out in the woods and you need something to eat, you're sure going to eat these things.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, from the farm to your belly. Oh, boy, today is National Fudge Day. I'm Steve Alexander, and that's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Hey, Jim, you're on WGN. What can we do for you? Jim, are you there?
I am interested.
Yeah, Jim, I'm sorry. Hold on a second, Jimmy. I understand you have a question about the new Mazda hybrid. Let's leave it at that. Tom, can you comment on the new Mazda hybrid?
Mazda's got a couple of new vehicles coming out, but the hybrid system itself, nothing in particular. It's based on an inline six, which is interesting, and it's very much like we talked about before, the hybrid systems that are being found in European premium manufacturers, where it's a mild system. They're sort of just sneaking it out there. They're not calling it hybrid, and it's just sort of part of the landscape now.
Is there going to be a subscription service for features in my car?
Yes, maybe. One of the things that manufacturers have been talking a lot about is new revenue sources or new revenue streams. And obviously they sell vehicles and they make money on those, but they would like continuing revenue from owners of their products on a regular basis. And subscription services seem to be one of the ways they hope to make money. And one of the reasons this makes sense now is because cars are more connected. We now have a vehicle that is always in communication with the manufacturer, so they can do things like recalls on software and things like that. But the things that can be subscribed to in the future might be navigation systems, they might be hands-free driving features, or certain safety connectivity things that require updates over time. And increasingly, what it looks like what's going to happen is that we're going to see these things be free for 2 or 3 years, after which you're going to be asked to subscribe to them.
Including heated seats.
Hopefully not heated seats. And that's one of those things, I think that was Toyota that tried that, and the outcry was massive. I don't think what we're going to see is subscriptions for things that are on your vehicle. A lot of outcry. I think these ideas are being floated to see just how much the public resists them. For example, Tesla's charging an awful lot of money for things on their products on a regular basis, their full self-driving system. Not only do you pay a lot of money up front for that, but the monthly fee is very high, too. And I think that's a really good test ground to see how this is going to work, because Tesla buyers tend to be just a little bit more progressive and open-minded about things,
yeah,
including paying for services on a monthly basis. Yeah. But I don't think your average Camry buyer is open to that.
Hey, Larry, you're on WGN Radio. What's your question, Larry? How can we help?
Yes, I'd like to know whether hydrogen-powered vehicles will overtake electric-powered vehicles.
The short answer is no. Hydrogen's really difficult to process. It's very energy-intensive to process, so it doesn't make a lot of green sense to do that. The output from hydrogen-powered vehicles is clean, but producing hydrogen is very difficult and very energy intensive. Well, the reason we're talking about hydrogen is because it makes sense for over-the-road truckers. The big trucks, Class 8 semis that we see on the highway, they're not going to be electric. That's not a very good system for them. So we're going to see those be powered by fuel cells, which are powered by hydrogen, which makes a lot of sense in that application.
What's the future of AM radio in cars?
I hope there's a long future for AM radio. The problem is that European manufacturers aren't really into AM radio anyway. It's not used in Western Europe. So they've never been pro AM, and perhaps you've owned a Mercedes or a Volvo product, for example, that didn't have very good AM radio. That's because they didn't care that much about it. But now they have this excuse that the AM radio signal is interfered with by the electric motors and electric cars, and then that's why we're having this conversation.
Sure. So, and notably, Volkswagen and Volvo and those sorts of operators, as well as Tesla, said we're not going to do it anymore. But they could carve out an exception for American cars, right? We have our EBS system, which is a link of AM stations like the one you're on right now throughout the country. And while I think that some people have described that as a fig leaf for an industry that's struggling to hang on, it is a very true, real thing. Our EBS system is a link of AM radio stations. And by the way, a lot of people like listening to AM radio. So back to you. Is Congress going to do something to mandate that American cars have it?
That's a good question. I don't have a good feel for what the law is going to be like, but it seems the situation is it's not especially expensive to put an AM radio in a vehicle. Yeah. I think that what manufacturers are trying to get away from is having two antennas on the vehicle. And if AM goes, FM is certainly going to go, because you still have XM satellite and other systems, and obviously people can put music on their phones. So, this is kind of a landmark thing, because if AM goes, we probably won't see broadcast receivers of any sort in cars in the future.
Hmm. I've always said that it doesn't matter if it comes through your dashboard or your phone or your computer, as long as you're
right
listening to WGN radio. So hopefully that will be the, notion that insulates us from even the absence of a radio and a dashboard. By the way, speaking of all of this, what about subscription services for satellite music? I wonder with podcasting and AI if people are going to feel like they need to pay a subscription to get, you know, the music channel that they like.
Good question. XM Satellite's an interesting company because people remember those were two separate, XM Sirius, I'm sorry, were two separate companies at one point and really couldn't make it individually. And I'm not convinced that they're especially popular now because you hear a lot of stories about people who let their subscription lapse and they're offered almost free subscriptions to renew. So I think that even XM Satellite might be in some trouble here because people are just listening to music via Bluetooth.
Man, remember when that hit? They offered Howard Stern like $100 million to be on the platform. And
it was huge.
It was a going concern for a while, but it's interesting, isn't it, how the media landscapes change so quickly these days.
Yeah, for a while, XM and Sirius were offered as home units, too, and you had antennas that you had to move to your window to pick up the signal, which wasn't a thing that a lot of consumers were willing to deal with.
Tom Appel is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can also, by the way, speaking of podcasts, hear his Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast. Visit consumerguide.com. Hey, Tom, we'll call you again. Thanks for your help today.
Thank you very much.